Hello and welcome to Unique Perspectives. I'm Callum Hook and this is the podcast where I talk to normal people who have fascinating stories to tell. My guest this week is Nelson Perea. Nelson is from Venezuela, which for a good few years now has been suffering from a devastating socioeconomic and humanitarian crisis. A UN report estimated in March 2019 that 94% of the population live in poverty. For those that are not aware, the country's economic system rapidly began to fall apart in 2015. Despite being the wealthiest nation in South America not so long ago, this wealth was almost solely dependent on the huge oil reserves in the country. However, the price of oil almost halved between 2014 and 2015, crippling the country's economy. Due to governmental corruption and serious economic mismanagement, Venezuela is now on its knees. To put into perspective how serious the situation is, it was estimated in 2017, hunger had escalated to the point where almost three quarters of the population had lost an average of 8 kilograms in weight. And by the end of 2018, inflation had reached 1.35%. This meant that a cup of coffee in 2016 was about 450 Venezuelan bolivars. But by 2018, that same cup of coffee cost 2.5 million bolivars. So 3 years ago, at just 23, Nelson left his family, friends, dentistry career and whole life behind and headed for Australia to escape his country of birth. Now a successful filmmaker and a fitness icon with 50,000 followers across social media platforms, Nelson has built a thriving online community. I'm very excited to kickstart the podcast with such a great guest. Obviously, you've had a pretty crazy last few years in more ways than one. You grew up in Caracas in Venezuela, didn't you? How was your lifestyle then? How was it a pretty chilled? Were things crazy or how was it?
Well, my country right now is obviously in a very difficult situation. But back then, like when I was growing up, things kind of started getting bad. But we still had, you know, like We had a good lifestyle. I don't come from a rich family or a poor family. We're just a pretty standard family where my mom and dad work really hard to be in the position they are. And they did their best, you know, to educate me and my sister and to provide us with the things we actually need and to teach us that we need to earn anything else that we want or whatever, you know, but they definitely provide us with our needs. And so that's pretty much how I define my life, you know, like how I just focus on what I need and earn what I want.
Take it in your control.
Yeah. But I definitely believe, especially after being here in Australia, that we are all in full control of our lives. Doesn't matter your circumstances, where you come from, how you look like, what you believe in, we're all in control of our lives, but it's up to you to take control of it, you know?
So like when did you kind of first notice things were getting particularly bad? How old were you?
Well, I gradually saw like how the country was and the economy and security was all going down. Like when you, let's say, being an average family back home, because Venezuela is such a rich country in natural resources like petrol and that kind of stuff, like an average family like us will have you know, a beach house, a boat, we will travel twice a year, that kind of stuff, you know?
So that was back in the day, so like 20, 30 years ago.
Back in the day, and that was average, you know? Like, we're not the richest, we're from a poor family, we just average that work hard. And then eventually, because these guys of the government took control of the country, which is kind of like a dictatorship, a fake democracy.
Is that Maduro?
Yeah, correct. So Chavez was the one that started everything. And after he died, he left the power to Maduro, which turned out to be even worse, surprisingly. So yeah, we just, it all went down pretty quickly, and it made, like, it was more clear to me when I became a dentist. I started dentistry, and once I got graduated, I got a pretty good job. I was making connections. I was preparing to do my specialization, you know, and I realized that my wage wasn't enough to do anything, man. I was earning, compared to dollars, it'll be like $80 per month working full time as a dentist.
Crazy.
Per month. That's insane. Like, you have to live with your parents. You're not able to fix your car if it breaks. You can't travel, you know, like anything you do will be because mom and dad pay for it, kind of. And so,
over the last like 3 years, the inflation rate has skyrocketed. So like people can't even pay for lunch with what they earn in a month.
Correct, correct. It's crazy, dude. It's crazy. I don't even understand now, after being so long outside of Venezuela, I don't even understand the economy we have, because it's changing literally every day, every hour. It's crazy. It's crazy.
One of the reasons I thought you'd be particularly interesting to talk to about this is because in Western media, when I was in Australia as well and living in the UK, I just don't think the Venezuelan crisis is really reported that much. So I was just wondering if, because like a lot of the people who'd listen to this will be from similar background to me, if you could kind of give explanation from maybe like 15 years ago, how it went from under Chavez, where everyone, there was a lot of social reform, to then 10 years later after his death, the country has gone from one of the wealthiest places in South America to what it is today.
So Chavez got into power because he was a very charismatic person that knew that he needed to convince the biggest part of the population to get in control. So he got in the mind of the poor people, because the poor people is like the biggest part of our population. In most countries in South America, the poor people, the lower class, is the biggest population. So if you get in the mind of those people, you will get in control because they will vote for you. And that was pretty much what happened. So he started telling these people, like, hey, why do like middle class or high class have a vote and you don't have it? You deserve it as well. You know, like, kind of putting that hate seed in their minds, like they have more than you, and we should take it. We should all be equal. That was him trying to implement socialism. But at that stage, at the very beginning, he didn't call it like that. He was like, no, this is democracy, and like, we all need to be equal, and we need to provide everything. Like, he was trying to make everything for free. So people are lazy, man.
It initially, kind of short term, it did drop poverty rates a lot, didn't it?
Yeah. No. He got a lot of attention, man. And even people from the middle class, a lot of them vote for him. He won by far in the first elections. Yeah, which is crazy. But then turns out he changed everything he said. You know, if you watch videos nowadays of how he got into the power and the things he were saying, is the complete opposite to what he was doing, you know? So, he was a very charismatic guy and obviously smart. That's how he got into the power, likely or not. And he knew the people he needed to convince and the people he needed to talk with, the people that resonated with him. And he was a very different guy because he wasn't, like, the smartest or in the... He wasn't very articulated, and that resonates a lot with lower class people. Someone that pretty much reflects them or looks like them or talks very similar to them, but he can represent them, sort of. So yeah, pretty much he got into power. He started implementing things that didn't work, and because he surrounded himself with all the people that he trusts, they started stealing the money pretty much. Like the government is completely corrupt. So, and when you have one of the richest countries in South America in the worst hands, like they will steal every penny, man. At that point, there's no money in the country. I don't know if you recently read anything about the blackout we had. So the country had a blackout like a month ago, full blackout.
No
in the
power.
Entire country. Yeah, no power in the entire country.
Mad.
Because they didn't.
That's so mad.
They didn't. No, they didn't use the money that was designated for the maintenance of the, I don't know how you call it, like these dams, you know, like so we have like a some sort of big dam that provides energy for the entire country, and because they didn't use the money, it was a crazy amount of money, like $80 million designated just to do maintenance, and that money was completely stolen, man. They didn't do the maintenance, and yeah, so it a lot of people died because the country went blackout for 4 days. People in hospitals died, newborns died, people that were sick getting surgeries and stuff died. Obviously, food got rotten in most houses, especially for poor people, you know? So people were getting showers in drains and on the street. People literally had to start stealing food from places and supermarkets and stuff because, like, there was no electricity, so everything got rotten. It's crazy, man. So,
obviously, you've grown up in this country and... So you still will have it very close to your heart. I mean, your family is still there. How does it feel from afar?
That has been like the biggest challenge of being in Australia and especially being so far, because it's not like I'm 3 hours away or, you know, 5 hours. I'm over a day of traveling from back home. You know, if something happens, I won't be there quick. And so that has been, I guess, mentally my biggest challenge, like knowing that I'm missing a lot of stuff from my family and that I'm very far from there. I'm watching them struggle and watching them still, my dad was 60 something years old, still working his ass off very hard every day. I'm not sure if I'm allowed to curse on your podcast.
Oh, mate, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. That's fine.
but yeah, it's that, you know, like I really, something that really drives me is that I want to be in a position where I can provide everything my family needs and my dad can finally, you know, like have some peace, because...
Of course, yeah. So your parents and your sister are still there.
Yeah, they're all there. My sister is in college. She's a bit different to me. She's very close to mom and dad. So we already tried to talk her about, you know, leaving the country, coming to Australia with me and stuff. But I don't think she's ready. I don't think she's ready for it.
Okay.
Yeah.
How old is she?
She will be 21 this year.
What's kind of your opinion on foreign countries interfering with the situation, like US providing foreign aid? Because on the one hand, right now you're in a crisis, so it seems quite obvious that you should be accepting foreign aid into the country. But with Venezuela being the country with the most oil reserves in the world, you can't help but feel like there's an ulterior motive there. So I'm just wondering how from someone... As a citizen, how do you feel about foreign countries getting involved?
I've seen a lot of that in the media. And in my opinion, and the opinion of many people like me with studies and stuff, I'm living outside of the country. We are at a point where we have a humanitarian crisis, you know?
Yeah.
So it doesn't matter. Yeah, everyone wants to take their cut. You know, obviously the states will want to have some oil reserves, and every country wants something from us. You know, like that's how it works, like it or not. And the countries that are along the dictatorship we have right now, they're all taking their cut, you know, like Russia, China, and those countries, Cuba. So at this point, if there is an opportunity of us being safe by a country like, let's say, the States, which will be, it could be our potential biggest help or way to get out of it. I say that will be our smartest decision. It's not about, you know, like what do the States want in return or what will they take after doing so. Is that we need to take these guys out because people are dying every single day. And we're not talking about one or two people. We're talking about several people, you know, like which.
And it's the most vulnerable poor people.
Yeah.
Who are the ones. So you kind of feel it's at the point now where you can't really be thinking of the motives because it's just such an emergency.
It just needs to get done. Yeah, it just needs to be done. That's it. It's not about what do they want in return. We worry about that later on. You know, like right now, we just need to get the problem out. Because if we keep worrying about, no, if we do this, the States, blah, 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 well, a lot of people keeps dying. People like me that are prepared to push the country forward are leaving the country because they don't find the opportunities they look for. We're not doing anything, you know, we're just deep in, like, getting the hole deeper. So, yeah. But at the same time, I feel like it's very unlikely that any other country will actually do something about it. It's all in talks, you know, but I feel like it'll be in our hands to actually get these guys out. So, yeah, it's very complicated. But hopefully things will get better, man.
Sure, man. So do you kind of remember the moment when you were there and you thought, I can't stay here anymore. I have to leave. Do you remember what that critical point was?
I was probably about a year working as a dentist.
And how old were you?
I was back then 23 already. And I would like... Because of everything that's happening in the country, everything being so hard, it always reflects also in the relationship with your family. Let me give you an example. So as a 23-year-old, where I was working a lot, I was surfing a lot, training and that kind of stuff, I still, you know, you still go out and that kind of stuff. And because the situation is really insecure and difficult, like if you go out, you're exposing yourself, you know, like there's a lot of kidnaps, people that get murdered or steal when you go out, so your parents get mad at you because you're going out and because you're coming late to the house. It sounds very silly and tiny, but it eventually gets big, you know, like because you're every time you go out you will have a discussion with your parents because they don't want you to go out because it's very dangerous. They don't want you to come very late because it's very dangerous. Then on top of that, you can't move away from the house. You have to still live with them because you can't afford, doesn't matter how hard you work, you can't afford a rent or whatever. And then at the same time, I was so I had this hunger for travel. I knew travel was one of my things. I traveled a lot inside my country and I knew travel. I wanted to see the world. I wanted to see more than just the bad situation we had home. And eventually when I got the opportunity to travel, it was always to the States and to visit family, but never to, you know, go on my own and explore and meet new people, new cultures, and see how other people live and expose myself to new perspectives, you know? But I couldn't do it. I couldn't do it because I couldn't afford it. So that was a big thing. And then even going surfing, which was one of my biggest passions, became such a problem because then my mom, I would go surfing at 4 a.m., and I'll have to drive like an hour.
You're crazy.
Yeah, yeah. So, I will do that just before going to my work as a dentist. I'll start in at 12 in the noon working as a dentist, but I will go at 4 a.m. to do surfing and then be back home around 10, have a quick shower and go to work. That's
a long surf.
Every day. Yeah. That was almost every day. And so that became a problem as well. My mom was like, it's too dangerous for you to go every day at that time and blah. So it's a lot of like tiny things getting accumulated, you know, that I was like, I'm 23 and I see my friends in other countries just living new things and exposing themselves to new stuff and, you know, like having that challenge of live by yourself because sadly we don't know how it's like because you live with mom and dad will do most of the things for you. And so, yeah, there was a point where I'm like, I don't feel like it's fair. You know, like I worked my ass off to become a dentist. And yeah, I do. Back then I thought I loved dentistry. It's not that I love it. It's that I was good at it and I liked it, but I didn't love it. I know love now with what I do. But back then it was like, I'm doing this thing that it really makes me happy. But at the same time, I just want to keep, you know, I want to explore, I want to do. And then I bought a GoPro back then and I started getting good feedback and I was just craving doing more travel and document it and get, you know, like posting for people because I realized, okay, my lifestyle is quite different to many people because many people would tell me like, hey, I want to do those things, those trips that you do. I want to hike that mountain that you did. I want to discover that beach that you went to. I'm like, maybe what I do is not common for everyone. To me, it was common. Like, this is what I do.
You just kind of get into your routine and then you don't actually realize that you're doing something quite different.
Yeah. So, yeah, pretty much like getting all those things together, like I'm doing... And then I realized the specialization also I wanted to do, which was becoming a maxillofacial surgeon. And that will take me four years to do. And I started thinking a lot of like, I don't think I will be able to survive 4 years living with my parents still, like not earning any money and with the country just getting worse and worse. That like I got really, you know, overwhelmed about it. And then I had a talk with my parents like, hey, we need to do something because I don't think our relationship, I don't think it will get any better if we keep going this path for 4 years, you know? So yeah, then we decided that maybe the best thing was for me to try in a different country. That's why Australia came up.
So how on just a practical level, if the currency became so devalued, how did you pick one of the most expensive countries in the world to go and try and live in? Like, how did that work? Because I mean, if you're from a wealthy country, moving to Australia is quite difficult.
It's so expensive. My family pretty much told me like, look, we have some savings from them the entire life that we are willing to help you to get started anywhere else you want. So they pretty much gave me a little bit of the savings to get started. They told me, look, pick whatever you want to go and we will help you to get started. But once you're there, you can't ask for a penny. You know, because obviously we can't with the economy we have back home. So we pretty much sold my car. I had a little bit, tiny bit of savings because of working in dentistry and the stuff. And they helped me paying the first English course I did to get to Australia. And I just came with enough money to survive for like 2 months, something like that, in here. Like just paying rent, food, phone, that's it. So that the need, when you have a need, man, that I need to make some money to actually leaving here. Otherwise, I'll have to go back. You will find a way, man. So this is pretty much the thought process. Because Venezuelans, when we leave, we're not planning to go back. Most of us, we like 95% of them are not planning to go back, at least not for now. I needed to pick a place where I knew there were opportunities, a place where I could find the things that I love, like, let's say, surfing, exploring a new language, whatever. And pretty much the biggest thing for me were to be try to be able to stay and be able to work, because I wouldn't be able to ask for money back home. So then the States, it's very difficult to stay, and pretty much you can't work. You can't work as a student and stuff. Then Europe, which is where most Venezuelans were, that have, like, we used to have quite a bit of migration years ago when the war was happening in Europe. So most of my friends, they have like dual passports. They have, let's say, Italian passport, Spanish passport, Portuguese passport as well. So I don't have that. I just have a Venezuelan passport, and going to Europe is pretty much, it'll be pretty much the same. Like, I think I'm able to work depending on the visa, but at the same time, I was like, why will I be going to Spain, which is where every single Venezuelan is going, that have a European passport? If I really want to change my life, if I really want to experience new things, I need to go to a new place, somewhere that I'm really scared because I have no one. You know, like, I really want to get uncomfortable.
Speak English when you moved to Australia?
I could understand English, and I could, like, maybe talk a tiny bit, but definitely not at the point I am right now.
You're like completely fluent.
I wouldn't say completely fluent, but I'm very happy at this stage I'm now, yeah, that I'm even able to make a podcast with someone that speaks English. So, man, like, trying to find a country where opportunities were popping up, and then I would be able to work. There was this country called Malta that came up, but it felt like that wasn't the right choice. And then I got some suggestions from my mom about Australia. She said, look, I have a friend in Australia that she's doing great, and she actually recommended for you. She said, you'll love it in terms of, you know, the things you, your hobbies and the stuff. That seems to be like a pretty good option. And started doing some research, and it seemed to be like the right place for me. And now I realize this was the best decision in my life.
So when you got to Australia, you couldn't use your dentistry degree, I imagine.
No, you can't, because it's like a health careers related career. So if I want to become a dentist here, I need to invest like $20,000 and then take like 3 exams and stuff to get my certification in Australia.
It's such a shame, because that just happens. I mean, it's understandable why countries have different kind of regulations, especially in healthcare. But it's such a tragedy that you can spend so long studying for something, then you go to a new country basically because you have to, and then they go, oh no, sorry, that's not going to work here.
I just feel like it should be cheaper, at least. Like, I understand that every country will have his own regulations and that you need to adapt to their law. You know, I understand that. But why would you make it so expensive when it's something that your country will get so much benefit out of it, you know?
Yeah. So, you're such an untapped resource, which they could just invest a tiny bit of money in you, and then you could be a fully fledged, instead of training up a novice from scratch.
Yeah, the way I see it is like, look, let people prove that they have a decent English to actually work in the system you have, that they do have the background or the studies to do so, and just make it accessible for them. Yeah, test them, make a test, but don't make it for the test for 20 something grand. That's insane. You know, like, you're losing some resources there.
Yeah, it's not good. So when you got to Australia, were you just kind of doing restaurant jobs, waiter, stuff like that?
Yeah, I got to Australia, and then the first jobs, because my English wasn't that good, I started doing delivery guy, like working with Uber Eats and stuff. So I started doing that on a bicycle.
I did that for Deliveroo a bit when I was at university. I thought it was a really good job, actually. Just on
it,
the side.
It was pretty fun at the very beginning. And I was like, oh, I'm just doing an extra workout in here, you know, and getting money for it. But then I realized how expensive it was in Australia. I'm like, okay, maybe this is not enough. I'm cycling so much every day to make the money for the week, and the money's barely covering rent and food and whatever. Dude, I was cycling so much, and it felt like my life was just going away, because you don't get deliveries all the time. Sometimes you gotta wait for it, you know? So I'll be just cycling around or being on the street, like, doing nothing, waiting for our order to come through. So yeah, it was pretty tough physically and mentally, knowing that I wasn't making that much money and that I needed to make to be on the street waiting for orders. So I started like asking every single restaurant that I was doing deliveries, like, hey, are you looking for someone? Are you hiring someone? I'm a hard worker. I'm really keen to work and whatever. So I started doing that. Eventually, I got a call. At the same time, I was dropping resumes, like, every single day. Okay. I was walking to restaurants, cafes, and that kind of stuff, because I knew that was the easiest way to get a job. That's something in hospitality. So it wasn't like I was waiting for opportunity to come. I was pursuing the opportunity. You know, like, I was doing my job as a delivery guy to make some money, but at the same time I was looking for a better job than that, because I knew that wasn't sustainable, like cycling 6 hours a day every day, plus doing my gym, plus doing you know, like, my studies and all that stuff. I knew it was just a matter of time of me giving up with that, or my body getting injured or something like that.
It's not something you could rely on long term, is it? Was it a good way as well to kind of get to know the new area that you'd moved to?
Oh, definitely to have a look around, you know, and find the best way to get around the city and stuff. But yeah, but I was so like, I need to get out of this, man. I know this is not sustainable after I saw the first payment. And so yeah, eventually I got this job at Vapiano. I don't know if you know that restaurant, an Italian restaurant. And what's funny about that job is that they actually say no to me twice. And I went the third time, and the guy was already like, you again, man? But this time I came sort of with a different attitude. I came like very confident to him, straightforward, and before he said no, we're not hiring, I told him like, hey man, are you really sure? Like, I can't remember exactly what I said, but it was something in the lines of, are you sure you're not hiring? Because I'm very proactive. I'm a happy person that just really tries to make the best of everything he does. I'm a hard worker. I have so much availability. Do you want me to work all night? I can do it. If you want me to work very early, I can do it. So I started saying everything I was able to do that for like a straight minute. And then this guy, his eyes just pop out, and he was like, okay, maybe this guy is something. So yeah.
To get you to shut up, he probably hired you.
yeah. And then he was like, let's have a chat. And he went straight to have a chat with me. Then he passed me on to another manager. She had a chat with me as well. And they were like, okay, we'll give you a trial and see if you're really that good. And got my trial, and they loved me, and got the job. Yeah. Before that job, I did this washer as well
for $10 an hour, which in here is insane, working for $10 an hour.
So whilst you were doing those jobs, did you you started a YouTube channel, didn't you?
When I decided to come to Australia, I realized like I wanted to definitely document the experience and that I was about to go dive in. I had a GoPro back then, and just before leaving Venezuela, I really got into YouTube. I started watching like Casey Neistat and some YouTubers. I was like, okay, there's some people that actually make a living with this. Like they make videos on YouTube and they live with it, you know, like people, brands, whatever, pay them. So I saw this thing of YouTube, which seemed impossible, especially for someone coming from Venezuela. I was like, okay, this is definitely something not for a Venezuelan, but it'll be cool to get into it, you know, to put some videos out there that maybe will encourage people to travel more or to be more positive. I don't know, just put myself out there. So I did a couple videos before leaving Venezuela. They were like, when I see them right now, I cringe. But still, I put them out there, you know, and they were travel sort of related videos. And I got pretty good feedback about it. I'm like, I really enjoy the moment that I hit that publish button, you know, like working, creating something out of nowhere, like documenting something, have an idea, put it in all together, and then sending it out to the world and maybe encourage someone to do something different or, you know, to be a little bit more positive or even just providing some entertainment for them. Sure. So before getting to Australia, I made a stop in the States to visit some family, and my family helped me to invest. I explained to my mom, like, hey, I really want to get into this thing of videos and stuff, blah, blah, blah. They helped me to invest into my first camera with a microphone. And the first day I got to Australia, I documented all that, like me stepping into the airport, all the stuff. And yeah, I started posting my first, I wanted to provide more than just a video with music. That was the first two videos I did. I was like, I want to talk to people, you know, I want people to know who's Nelson and what's his mission and what is he doing, and document pretty much everything that's happening, that I'm moving from Venezuela to the other side of the world. So that's what I did. I started doing some videos talking to the camera, and that now we're in a whole different level.
Yeah, man. So I was looking up. So you've got like over 50,000 followers these days, haven't you? Across yeah, all the platforms. So you kind of, are you moving full time towards that? What's the goal?
So since 3 weeks ago, I'm doing this full time.
Oh, congrats.
Yeah, 3 weeks ago I quit my job at a restaurant. That was like the job that was providing security. Obviously the money that I needed for rent and the stuff, but I have gotten enough clients now to know that what I do is very unique and it works, it has some value, and that I can make a living with it. It is scary dropping the job that I know it provides for me every week on a constant basis to go for something like freelance or doing YouTube or social media, where maybe 1 week you won't make a penny, maybe a month you won't make a penny, but maybe a big client will come and, you know, you'll have some sort of breakthrough.
Yeah. It's not cyclical though, so you don't know when your next big thing is going to be at any point.
Yeah, so. exactly. So
this moment then, 3 weeks ago, must have been quite a... I mean, you've probably been aiming for that for a while now, so...
Oh, dude, it was such a long time. I'm very excited about it, and I have been so much productive cutting out that time that I used to work at the restaurant. But it's very scary, and like I said, it's up to me how many clients I get or how much work I get done. Because the more I get done for my own content, the more clients they come to me because they see my work, that my work keeps getting better. So it's driving me somehow more income. But yeah, it has been definitely scary, and it hasn't stopped being scary. Like right now, you know, like I'm in a very difficult spot, but at the same time, I know what I have to do. It's just a matter of me doing it and putting the work and keep, you know, investing into myself and cutting all distractions, saving my money and spending my money wisely. And that's what I'm doing right now. I quit the job, and then I was thinking it for a while, and I made enough savings to sustain myself for a couple months if I really wanted to try to see what happens, you know, and like just see what happens. But you got to make smart decisions, you know. It's not like I can quit if I have not a single penny in my bank account, you know. Like
what you were mentioning, actually, when you first got to Australia, though, in that if you have to make it work, you'll make it work. So
yeah,
it's ballsy that you've done it, but I've no doubt you'll have success with it, because it's the attitude of just grinding it out. You can always rely on that.
I learned from coming from a place like Venezuela is that when people have a need, they'll find a way, man. There's no excuses. You don't get around it. You just find a way to do so, and you will put the work that it needs to be put to get what you want. And so right now, that's what's driving me, you know, like the need of, I need to make it work. There's no other option for me right now. And that's what I'm
almost doing. Always some of the most successful people are people that were in that fight or flight moment at some point. They just had to succeed. And it's something I often kind of think about from a fairly privileged background. You're never really super uncomfortable getting to the point where you have to make it work. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
I don't know. I think you're totally right that people do tend to thrive when they're completely forced to do so.
Absolutely, man. When getting out of your comfort zone, living in the uncomfortable is where thriving is. And like, there's this thing as well that we all like to wait for the perfect moment. I was for so long waiting for the perfect moment while I was doing on my hospitality jobs on the side. Like when I get X amount of money saved or whatever, or when I get X amount of clients, I'll drop all everything and just go full on with my video work and my YouTube and my own content. But that moment will never come, dude.
Yeah, you're always going to have a good excuse, aren't you? There's always going to be a good excuse.
There's always something going on. There's always, especially in the spot that I am, it's very difficult. I have this visa thing trying to soar away to stay here. At the same time, I have my family working really hard. I'm being scared of something happening to them back home and that I need to help them as much as I can from here. Then I have my studies. That's something I can't quit because I'm on a student visa. So I depend on going to those classes. So I have to. That's compulsory for me. At the same time, you have rent. You have to eat. You have to cook all the stuff. I have to make my videos. I need to look for clients. I need to get my clients' work done. And so there's so much going on, and life happens so quick, man. That moment will never come. And 3 weeks ago, when I was thinking so much about it, like, should I quit? Should I done? I literally record myself because I try to document as much as I can of my life for the future to show people how I got there. And I literally record myself telling me, like, I don't know if I should quit today. It was a Sunday. I don't know if I should quit. I feel like I've been waiting for a moment that will not come, that is up to me. And there's no excuse. Right now, I don't have the biggest savings, but I have enough to sustain myself for a couple of weeks so I can actually try going all in with this. And not even all in, because I still have my classes, but go like getting more time to put into this that I'm doing. And I got a call like three hours later from my mom to tell me that a very close person to us passed away.
Oh man.
And that person was pretty much one of the reasons why I was able to stay in Australia. Because that person helped us financially to pay for my course and all that stuff back then. So that really hit me like, dude, life is so quick. And someone could go tomorrow. That could be me. That could be anyone close to me. Why would I keep waiting for a day that I know deep inside me that it won't come? Why? Let's just dive into the uncertain, you know? Let's just go all in, actually put an insane amount of work in what I'm doing that I know is my passion, that I know is what I love, creating content. And I know that I will and I'm able to change the world today in a positive way. And let's just do that. Let's just do that from today. Let's just quit this job that I know is not making me happy, that is providing money for me, but I know I can make much more money if I actually dive deeper into what I love. If I actually pursue in a deeper level my passion, money will come, man. That's how the universe works. The more you do what you love, it's crazy, but the more you do what you love, the more money comes with it. It's just a matter of you putting actually the work and being patient. Patience is key, because you'll need to endure hard times and, you know, wait for the right opportunities at the right moment, but you need to prepare for those moments. So
would you would you say for you the goal would be to be able to earn enough money to then be able to give to your family and also support yourself? Is that a big goal for you?
It's kind of, but I'm trying not to make money a goal, because in the end, like one of my biggest goals is to actually leave something, some sort of legacy here in the world. That Nail for Life, I don't really care much about people remember who Nelson was. I do care about people remember what I'm preaching about,
the message,
good vibes. So yeah, the good vibes and stuff. And if someone says like, hey, there was this guy, which I don't remember his name, but I know he was from a country called Venezuela, and that guy worked hard, man. He proved that it doesn't matter where you come from, how you look like, that we're in control of our lives, and that guy made the floating rock a little bit better than he found it. That's all good for me. You know, like if I know I can make the floating rock a little bit better, I'm all good.
I've seen you online and your insane work ethic. Can you give me an idea of how you start your day, especially now that you're completely committed to this?
Yeah, so pretty much every day, even weekends, I wake up at 4:50 a.m. Normally Saturdays and Sunday, it'll be like 5:20, 5:30.
Have a little line on the weekend, 5:20.
Yeah, but because I don't go training. So from Monday to Friday, I will wake up at 4:50. I'll make my bed, get changed, brush my teeth, and then I'll go training at quarter past five. I'll be training CrossFit. Be home at 6:15, have a quick shower, have some breakfast. Then about 7:15, I will be just on a really quick downtime.
Wait a minute, you do those insane workouts without having had breakfast first?
Yeah, that's correct.
that's not how my body works at all. I need breakfast before doing anything like that.
You know that the idea of me training at 5 a.m. every day without having any food, that sounds crazy to me. I said a million times I couldn't do that. Like whenever someone would brought it to me, I'll be like, that's insane. I don't know how you guys can do that and stuff. That was like 8 months ago until I did it, man. And I can tell you from several months doing it that my productivity and my energy, everything has just improved, man. It's like a version 2.0 of myself. Like
really?
getting conquering the morning, it's like you conquered the day, man. It doesn't matter what happens throughout my day. It can happen anything bad. But at the end, I know two things, that I got two things done. Doesn't matter what happened to me throughout the day. I got my bed done and I got my workout done. So I still feel like I did something, I live intentionally. So, man, by 10 a.m., I have already trained. I did my bed. I had a shower. I had breakfast. I probably watched some videos to learn something, because most of the videos I watch on YouTube and stuff is to learn tutorials and that kind of stuff. And I already posted on social media and I already started doing some editing. So it's crazy how much I get done before some people even got out of bed, you know?
What kind of time do you go to bed? Do you find, obviously you have to go to bed a lot earlier when you do that?
When I started doing all this, I was trying to find how much do I actually need to sleep? Because it doesn't matter if you wake up at 4:50, 5 a.m., 6 a.m., 7 a.m. In the end, what matters is what do you do with the time that you're awake and how much do you actually sleep? Because it's crazy when you do some calculations and stuff, how many years of life we waste just sleeping, man. It's insane. I find out that most people need to sleep 8 hours. And then
yeah, mate,
some
that's,
people...
that's totally what I'm on. I definitely need 7 or 8 hours easily.
Some people can sleep 7 and be all good. And a very few people can sleep less than 7 and actually be productive and healthy and all that stuff. So I decided that I wanted to try 7 hours, and I need to do what most people won't be willing to do, or they're afraid to do, or they think they can't do. So I need to put, if there is an extra hour that I can put every single day, instead of sleeping 8 hours, I'm putting 1 hour extra day, which it doesn't sound like much individually, but when you do it for a month, there's a lot of hours in there, man, like 30 hours. Like, yes.
So have you found 7 hours is the amount that you need? Seven
hours is the time that I've been striving for since I started. Sometimes I fail, like, because any human at some point, you know, you'll feel tired or whatever. When I feel like my body needs an extra rest, I just do it. I don't think about it, because I know when I need it. But for most of the time, I'm able to sleep just for 7 hours. The thing is, with what I'm doing, sometimes editing can go overnight, you know. Sometimes I sleep like 4 hours, sometimes I sleep 5, 6, and eventually during the week there's a day where I'm not able to keep up, so I need to rest or have a nap in the middle of the day to try to recover. But ideally I'll sleep 7 hours every day, so that means that by 9:50 p.m. I should be in bed already.
I find, because I've been trying to get up at about 5:45 during the week, yep, to go to the gym before work, but I normally find that it's the hardest thing I struggle with is getting to bed early enough, because
Oh, same.
If you're not asleep by 10, then if you go to bed at 11, that's a whole hour less, and it just makes such a difference.
Yeah, it definitely does in the morning. And dude, I feel like, because I try, since I came to Australia, my goal, one of my the good habits that I was trying to implement in my life was waking up early, because I knew most of the other things I was able to do, like I consider myself very disciplined because of my fitness background, training and surfing and all the stuff. Like I'm very determined to the things that I really want to get and do and make happen. But there was one habit, like I pretty much quit drinking. I don't smoke. I don't do drugs. I train. I pretty much try to keep like a healthy diet and the stuff. But there was one thing that I couldn't do, man, never. And that was waking up early just for the sake of doing so. If I have to go surfing, I could do it. If I had to travel, I could do it. But if I had to just wake up early because I knew I would be more productive, I couldn't get out of bed, man. I tried for so long, and I'll set my alarm at 6 a.m. the night before, and I'll be hitting the snooze button until 7:30, until 8, depending on how tired I was. But I never was able to wake up at 6 unless I had something compulsory to do. So in the end, what changed it all was me sitting and having like a real chat with myself, no joke, like looking at myself in the mirror and being like, okay, so you're asking all of this to the universe and you expect the universe to give it back to you or reply to you when you're not even willing to wake up before the other guy that wants it, you know, because there is someone out there, not just one people, several people that wants the same as me. So why did the universe will freaking pay attention to me, you know? Like, and then I was like, you know what? I have to do this. I need to prove myself that I can wake up earlier just because I know it will get me faster, more efficiently, more healthy to the place that I want to be, you know? So that's pretty much what changed everything. My why, man, I think your why you do things, why you have some beliefs, why do you want to do something X in this world is what really defines people. So,
and if you can find that, then you can direct your motivation a lot more.
100%. So my why is what changed everything, because I have such a big why and I want to make, I want to do things that are much bigger than myself. I'm able to wake up at 5 a.m. every single day, because otherwise everything that I want to do and make happen won't happen, because I really need those extra hours and I need to be putting the work before some people even get out of bed.
Well, Nelson, man, you've been such an amazing guest to have on. Just have one more question for you, though, related to the whole Venezuelan issue. Is there anything you suggest that people living in the UK or people in the States, what would you say that anyone could do to help?
Look, I would say that if people can do some research about it, you'll get some perspective. Even if you're not doing anything, getting some perspective of what happened in Venezuela will make sure that those things don't happen in other countries. If people understand, like, okay, like, this is not a way to go. Look what happened to one of the richest countries in South America for doing this. We're definitely not going down that path. What I try to encourage people from other countries, once they get to know me and where I come from, and I try to explain what's happening for them to raise some awareness, you know? So if anyone can spread a little bit of information, maybe you decided to read an article of what's happening, or you saw this video of Venezuela, if you spread the word, that will actually help a lot, because it will make the world aware of what's happening, and to have gives the country some hope, because if this is the thing, people in there, because the media is so controlled by the government, the only place where information gets spread is to social media. And whenever Venezuelans see that some countries, like first world countries or like the States, Australia, even Australia, talk about what's happening back home, that gives them a lot of hope of like, okay, we're going somewhere because the world is listening to what's happening. So I feel like if anyone can actually share something they read or something about Venezuela, that will help a lot.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of Unique Perspectives. We're still in the early stages here, so if you have any suggestions or ideas for the show, please feel free to get in touch. And of course, if you know anyone who you think has a great story to tell, then get them in contact. The best way to do that would be through messaging us on Facebook, Instagram, or Twitter. And finally, if you feel like this podcast deserves a nice rating, please do leave one. It really helps out. Thanks again for listening, and see you next episode.